Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh. On the radio.
30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys in line.
Welcome back to In This League on FNTSY. And do I have a special guest for you guys? I don't know if you've heard of him. Maybe you have. He's been on FNTSY before. Oh, yeah. He only has the number one selling fantasy football black book ever. It is Joe Pisapia of the Black Book. I think I said you had the number one selling fantasy black book. I don't know if there's another fantasy black book, Joe, but if there was,
Let me tell you, I would still be first, but there is. It takes you down a whole other deep, dark web of searches, that other black book. But I'm very happy to be here. I love my time on FNTSY. I loved it as a host for a couple years, and it's always good to pop in. I get to hang out with my boy Craig Mish all the time, and it's nice to hang out with my brother Scott Bogman as well.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I don't know, Joe, that anyone doesn't know what RPV is or why they should be buying this book. I would assume most people listening to this have bought a black book in the past, but why don't you break down what we have going for them this year, what RPV is, everything that you possibly can.
Well, you see, this time of year, Scott, everybody's got their rankings, and I've got my rankings, and what time I'm going to readjust my rankings because it's Tuesday and Tuesday's ranking day and all the rankings and all the things. And basically what it is it's a bunch of opinion. It's great. And it's debate fodder and it's fun, but it's not a strategy. It's not going to help you win leagues. It's really not. What's going to help you win leagues is strategy, and strategy is relative position value, because it's not enough to have rankings. What you have to do is quantify those rankings and then have those rankings adjustable and quantified in spots for different league formats, different league depths. That's what it's all about. And I think that's why relative position value is such a winning strategy, because, you know, there's other value-based drafting systems, but none of them are nearly as succinct, as clear, and as really streamlined for the user, where you can go in there, you know what you're looking at, you know how to adjust and build core strength in your team. And it's not just about filling roster spots, it's about building a core and a strength on each roster that you have. And when people learn to do that properly, you have great success. And that's why we're number one. We don't have a major entity behind us. It's just us. And yet here we are, number one for 6 weeks on Amazon, number two in all the football books for the last month. So we must be doing something right, because somebody's winning some leagues here with the Black Book.
What is the one that's beating us? And when I say us, I can this year because Joe let me write in the Black Book and I wrote a third of it. So
yes, you did. Let's just say the rookies, if you are playing Dynasty and you're not reading the Black Book, shame on you, because Scott Bogman is basically just crushing. Like, he's absolutely crushed the entire thing. But, you know, it's funny because what happens is on Amazon, when you have these things pop up, you know, you have like Joe Namath's book came out. So right. That rockets to number one. So when we're number two, we're right back there. And it kind of moves around. Like, there's a new book about Dwight Clark that just came out. That gets bumped and things like that happen. So we have been between number six and number two, for the entire last 2 months. But it's getting that number one spot's hard. Last year, we had it this time of year above Tom Brady's book, which was amazing. But look, you know, we were number two behind Warren Football, Warren Sharp, who's one of the big, you know, betting guys around in terms of NFL. So we were number two behind him for the last whatever. Now he's way off the charts and we are way ahead of him. So go figure
that,
you know, so that's what I mean. It's about consistency and the fact that we're just crushing it on a daily basis. And it's because of the people we have, you, Jake Seeley, Matt Franciscovich, Nate Hamilton is going to be on with you later. And all these, Derek Brown, you got Gary Davenport, you got Tim Heaney, you got Chris Meany, you got Meany, Miney, Moe, you got everybody. and it's the passion that comes through, but it's also the fact that people can look at it and go, oh my God, this makes sense. I understand this. And I feel like I can actually use it in my drafts. And it's not just opinion. There's opinion in there and there's information in there, but it's also actual approach and strategy in standalone chapters. And I think that's the difference. And that's why it stands out.
I absolutely love the Black Book, and I bought mine, and I told you about my misadventure of sending you because you sent me the book.
I could do author copies. I didn't realize I could do author copies. Now I know that.
Thank you.
So now next year you'll get your own. I will gladly buy one for you. I didn't know. And I was like, oh, well, now I know. Of course. Yes.
Well, when I send you my address next year, make me send it to you twice. So yeah.
How do you know where you live? How do you find your house at night when you go home?
I don't leave. That's just what it is. I sit at home and just record podcasts all day long. But what I have set up for you, Joey, and I don't know that we'll get to the whole thing, so it will probably bleed into my hour with Nate as well. But I just really quickly, and you know how I am, I like to over-prepare. I did the top question for each team in the league as far as fantasy goes. So we're going to start out in the AFC East, your division of your New England Patriots. But we're going to start out in Buffalo. And I want to know, at the end of the year, Joe, who is the number one at running back and at wide receiver as far as points go in Buffalo? If you had to pick today, right now.
See, I think in points, when you look back at the year, I think overall probably John Brown will be that guy.
Okay.
But I don't think he is the one that you necessarily, I think that he is a better best ball investment than an actual one. I think Cole Beasley won't be that far behind him. Cole Beasley have the better floor. John Brown's going to get those points in bunches. So when it comes down to roster construction, I think you look at your roster and say, okay, what do I need here as a secondary bench receiver? Am I looking for a guy that I could throw in there on some good matchups, or are you looking for a floor guy? Because I have a lot of upside already with my wide receivers. So I think you kind of pick and choose that way. And they're both not that far away from each other. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to be John Brown. It wouldn't shock me if it was Zay Jones. The running back one is so much harder. And I think that I'm going to stick with my guns, which is I do believe the second half of the year is going to be Devin Singletary's coming out party. And whether it be LeSean McCoy getting dealt, whether it be him getting dealt before we even hit week one, I think it's going to be Singletary when all said and done in terms of the guy who led the team in rushing behind, of course, Josh Allen.
Yeah, Josh Allen's probably going to lead that team in rushing. You're probably right there just because they have so many guys. If they do actually go into the season with McCoy, Singletary, and Gore, they're going to eat into each other, and Josh Allen's going to be out there for every play. So I'm 100% with you. Now, because you did just mention, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Zay Jones. I think it's John Brown, but it could also be Cole Beasley. Does that mean that none of these guys are really draftable in your 12-man standard league?
I mean, I think Brown is draftable. I guess here's the funny part to me is I think Cole Beasley is kind of an intriguing little piece. The problem is I feel like I like Adam Humphries better, and he's kind of in that same mold, and neither one of them has a very thrilling offense, but I was very impressed with what Humphries did, and I think that he is going to be used a ton in that offense. And not that I love Marcus Mariota or Tannehill.
I hate him so much.
Well, and that's fair. But at the same time, I feel like they've also haven't had somebody for that role in quite some time. And he's very good in that role. So it wouldn't shock me if a guy like Beasley was useful, too. I think that Beasley's probably one of these guys that you'll see a lot of waiver wire ads after a big game. And then he'll be added and dropped, and he'll be a guy that'll be useful. He'll be useful to everybody. He'll be like the Village Bicycle in your league. Everyone will get a turn.
He'll have that 8-catch game in a PPR league. Everyone will go hammering at the wire for him. Then he'll have 2 catches the next day. And he'll
probably, but that's going to be the Bills offense anyway.
Right, exactly. Now, for Miami, I was having a hard time putting a question together. Ugh. So I kind of said, is anyone worth drafting on this team? And you can answer this however you want, Joe. Looking at this team, I hate taking the wide receiver. I see myself investing in Parker a lot just because he's available late. But the running backs are also seemingly an impossibility. So who are you taking from Miami?
The weeks that Kenny Stills and Ryan Fitzpatrick are on the field together, I think that's a match that I really like. And I'm still going to draft Kenyon Drake. I don't care. I'm not afraid of this Ballage nonsense. And I just think eventually talent will win out. And I know we spoke on our show about Emory Hunt, and he basically said the same thing. And I kind of agree with him there. So to me, I feel like that's what we're looking at. So Drake Stills for me, I'm done with Parker. I can't do it anymore. I've done it before. That's it. No, no, no. And I don't even know week to week how it's going to work with the quarterbacks. It's going to be a big, giant mess. This is a bad football team on both sides of the ball. That's all I know.
Yeah. And my thing with the running backs is I don't think that the Dolphins are above, you know, McCoy gets cut. Let's bring in McCoy. You know what I mean? Jerick McKinnon, of course, he had as you know, we're doing this, he just had the PRP injection in his knee. So he's a guy that's possibly available too, and just someone we're not thinking of gets cut. Could end up in Miami as well. So I think that that is a distinct possibility at this point, which makes it hard for me to hone in on Balazs or Drake. I think I would rather have Balazs because he's cheaper, but I'm trying to avoid this situation if I can. I do. I tell you what, I like Albert Wilson in like a 16 man league as a end of the league, end of the draft flyer. That's what I like. But he's got all kinds of injury stuff. Speaking of injury stuff, Joe, New England. There's so many questions with this team. It could be, you know, who is there really a Gronk replacement? Is N'Keal Harry going to be any good? Because we haven't heard positive reports yet. You know, James White and Damian Harris. But my question is, and I think it's the most important one when you're drafting, because he is going earlier than pretty much anybody else. How confident are we in drafting Sony Michel with his knee issues?
This is a good one. I am not, because where he's going, I think there's other guys very comparable that I like. I mean, he's kind of been going in that Derrick Henry grouping of running backs, and I'd rather have Derrick Henry than him. He's in that sort of an ADP right now, and the knee is troubling. It's a concern. He was absolutely good last year. He certainly had plenty of strong games. I still think he's a nice RB2, but the problem is, especially when you get to PPR, which is basically what most of us play now, there's just other ways to skin a cat when you get to RB2. I mean, his counterpart, James White, is far more intriguing to me. Now, I don't expect him to necessarily get the same amount of rushing yards he got last year, but as long as he gets the same amount of targets, that's all I care about. And I think when you're looking just for points and you're looking at the piece of the offense that he is, I mean, James White had a fair amount of touchdowns as well last year. So to me, I think that Sony Michel is still that guy I fade because I'm not getting enough of a discount on that knee, and it should be worrisome. And look, he's still a good player, but I think that there's risk and then there's unnecessary risk. And I think he's just an unnecessary risk.
I'm looking at the Fantasy Pros consensus rankings, and Sony Michel is checking in at 65 overall, which isn't bad. That puts him in the, what is that, middle of the sixth round. Mm-hmm. And but he is now behind, and I think people are getting, look at this, he's two spots ahead of Kenyon Drake. I think I'd still rather have Sony Michel over Kenyon Drake.
Well, he's fallen considerably in the last month then, because that number was far higher, you know, at least a couple weeks ago even.
Right. So. Yeah, no, I remember looking at it and it was higher. What do you, he's behind Philip Lindsay now. Would you rather have Lindsay or shocking. Michel?
I would rather have Lindsay. I'm still a Lindsay believer, personally. I Freeman might get a little bit more action. That's fine. That's great. But Lindsay was terrific last year, and I see no reason not to think that he can be everything he was last year.
How about David Montgomery?
See, that's I'm a Montgomery guy, so I'm going to go with Montgomery. I feel like Nagy is ready to take that offense. Trubisky's ready to take that offense to the next level. And I'm going, by the way, did you see that Matt Nagy throw?
Yeah, he got a cannon. Look at that.
Look at him go. Woo, man, look at that toss.
I bet you he doesn't throw a football for a week after that one. That was really good, but that was one of those where.
I'm looking around the NFL and I'm thinking to myself, there's a couple teams that could use him.
And don't show that clip to the Dolphins, for God's sake.
How about the Titans?
With the Jets, is Adam Gase going to ruin Le'Veon Bell?
Well, the Jets are going to ruin Le'Veon Bell because the Jets ruin everything because they're the Jets. But look, I don't think he's going to ruin him to the... Everyone has this expectation of Le'Veon Bell from the Steelers offense, and that's not where he's playing anymore. So you have to temper back your expectations a little bit, but I don't think you want to take him off the board. He's still an RB1. I've seen him go as early as fifth overall, and I've seen him go as late as the mid-second round. So it's a huge variance league to league about who likes Le'Veon Bell and where they like them. So I still say he's an RB1. In full PPR, I still like him a ton. I think he will still be very good. I think he'll be 85% of the player he was, and that's still very good. And I'll tell you what, I think he's safer than David Johnson. I know everybody loves David Johnson, this Kingsbury thing, and everyone's just drinking the Kool-Aid, the Kyler Murray Kool-Aid, because Kyler starts with a K and so does Kool-Aid. Everyone's drinking it, and I think everyone's just hammered drunk right now on it, and I'm not sold. I'm just not there yet. I'd rather have Le'Veon Bell.
Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Kool-Aid. That's Kyler the new Kool-Aid flavor.
A lot of K's. A lot of K's there.
Yeah, just enough to not be racist there. So
let's not talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Adam... Adam Gase didn't want Le'Veon Bell. That's kind of my problem with him. And I think he's going appropriately, right?
Does he want his job? Like, I get it. You didn't want Le'Veon Bell because you didn't want the structure of the organization, contract, whatever. But don't you want your job in a year? How many times are you going to get fired, bro?
I love the image of you talking to Adam Gase. Be like, bro, what are you doing, bro? Focus, come on.
Focus. Eyes here, Gase.
Eyes up, Gase. Let's go. What are you doing? How about moving over to the NFC East? Zeke, is this a real holdout in Dallas? Is this because you and I specifically, Joe, we've talked about this on the Black Book show on Fan Tracks, where we don't really buy into this. We think this is I don't want to play in the preseason deal. And I don't know, it's looking more and more real every single day.
Well, Graziano from ESPN just put out something about Gordon and about Elliott that basically encapsulated everything that we've been saying. And I know I've been saying everywhere about it, which is, If Ezekiel Elliott, he broke it down into numbers, which basically, if he sits out this year, it's stupid, because what happens is his salary then gets carried over for the next year, apparently. Yeah. So instead of making $9 million next year, he would make the three or whatever it is this year that he's due to make, which I know you say that is kind of absurd when you think about how the lack of money he's getting.
Right.
This year, it's kind of crazy. So,
but he's also put all kinds of stressors and problems on the Cowboys. So
100%. But he's also put wins in the Cowboys column. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters down in Dallas. We know that about Jerry Jones. This organization isn't stupid. Dak Prescott without Ezekiel Elliott is like, he's not that good to begin with. He is bad. OK, he is bad without Ezekiel Elliott in that stretch without him that he had a couple years ago. Eight touchdowns, 9 picks. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not a good scene. You need him. The other guys, I don't want to hear about Pollard. I don't want to hear about Alfred Morris. I don't want to hear it. They are not Ezekiel Elliott. He's but Mike a game Weber. Changer. Right. Yeah. Great. Now, they have a better chance of Steven Weber from Wings to get over there. But let me tell you something. I would be shocked if they don't pay Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah.
And I would be shocked if he is not there week one. And I would be shocked if he came in and played in camp at all at this point, because why do you want to? Who cares? It's hot. Just, you know, whatever. He'll be fine. I'm not worried about it. And this Graziano article on ESPN, which is actually very good, I retweeted it this afternoon. It goes into detail about also the difference between Le'Veon Bell and him and why it's a very different scenario in terms of what he could really do and how much he'd really hurt himself if he sat out the entire year.
All right. Well, we're going to hit a break. When we come back, we'll get more questions from every single team with Jeff. Be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99, or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
In this league.
I'm back!
Welcome back. It's In This League on FNTSY. I'm here, Scott Bogman here, with Joe Pizzapia. We just got done talking about Zeke and Dallas. We're moving on in the NFC East, Joe, and the New York Giants. This is the big question. And once again, a lot like the Patriots, I feel like with the Giants, you can hone in on a bunch of questions. You know, is Evan Ingram going to take a boost? What's going to happen to this offense when they transition from Eli to Daniel Jones, if that should happen this year? The wide receiver values, because Golden Tate's suspended and Shepard is hurt. But my question is, with Shepard banged up and Tate suspended, is Saquon still worth the number one overall pick? Because I've seen people coming off of Saquon as the number one overall pick, Joe. So what do you think?
Well, he's the number one overall talent, but I think the concern is a little real when you start thinking about the quarterback transition that's looming, when you start thinking about the injuries that they've already got going into the year, and when you start thinking just about another year older of Eli Manning, however long he is the quarterback before that transition happens. I think what's going to happen is Saquon Barkley is still a transcendent player, and those guys like Walter Payton, I think that's like the best example I can give you, is you go back and you look at those crappy Bears teams that Walter Payton played on, but it didn't matter. He was still an absolute beast. I think that's what Saquon's career is going to be like, at least for the next couple of years. And it's kind of sad. I feel sad for him because he's a fantastic player. but I think he's going to do enough to still warrant a top five overall pick. And I wouldn't worry about it. And look, it's tough right now because Kamara's got a question because we've never really seen him carry more of the workload. And the more of the workload he had last year, he wasn't quite as good as he was the year before in terms of efficiency. So there's a little bit of question there. There's a question about McCaffrey. Can he stand up again to the pounding? And can he repeat what he did last season? Will Ezekiel Elliott be on the field? So there's no such thing, I think, as the consensus easy number one this year. It was Zeke until this holdout for me where I would just like, nope, just go with Elliott. He's just easier. But if you want to take Barkley number one, I don't have a problem with it. But I think there's going to be a couple weeks in there where you're going to be a little kind of rolling your eyes about great, but then he's going to have those other weeks where he's going to be brilliant. And I think that's where we're at right now. And it's kind of fun because I like it when there isn't a clear number one. There's a clear four, but there is not a clear one this year. And I think that makes for a lot of good chatter.
Yeah. And I kind of said this.
You know, the one's going to be, it's going to be Gurley when all said and done. We're all going to be sitting here and laughing our ass off.
Well, you and I have him at five right now. I think you do have to put him back a little bit just because of the knee stuff, because they are going to limit him and he's not going to get as many touches as he did last year. But I think we knew that going in. You know, once he got hurt and he was banged up in the playoffs and he didn't play well in the Super Bowl, you kind of knew. You know, he's not going to get the same treatment that he did last year. So I think he kind of came into the year expecting that. And I feel like just the off-season-ness of all this stuff, obviously preseason games are starting to go now, but we build up stories about these guys so much. And you put so much concern, especially on the top guys. For me, I'm still taking Saquon one, you know, and that's just it. I think Saquon is by far the best running back in the league. And to be honest, and I'll probably look like a silly goose saying this, but I think Daniel Jones is better than people gave him credit for. I don't think he should have gone as early as he did in the draft, but I think I don't think you can just immediately write him off. And I feel like a lot of people are already doing that. And you and I talked about that with the, you know, oh, look at this great pass from Daniel Jones, like his first day in camp when he overthrew someone or someone ran a wrong route and he was just throwing it to the sideline or whatever. And everybody wanted to start on that. But after that, you haven't seen any of that crap because everybody's talked about how good he's looked.
Well, that's what's so dangerous about camp news, too. It's just super dangerous. But look, I just don't know what Daniel Jones' effect in the transition is going to be in the offense, because especially when you start taking wide receivers out of the equation, like that's not what you want to do either. So the Giants right now are an organization, which is amazing to say this, but they're kind of a mess. And they've been kind of a mess for a couple of years now. And that's not something you ever equated with the Giants in the past.
Yeah. I mean, if it all falls apart and they look absolutely terrible and they're picking in the top five again, it's just Gettleman's gone. So the good thing is it's either going to work or you're going to have a new GM. So that's the good news there. Let's move on to Philly here, Joe. Is the buzz on Miles Sanders real? Because there are some sites where he gets an absolute balloon of a draft spot. I think he's like in the 60s on ESPN. That is not probably where he should be going. Jordan Howard is still there. I'm not a Jordan Howard guy. I think he's kind of a jag, but 93 is where he's consensus ranked. But he's got a lot of upside. So what is your opinion on Miles Sanders?
The buzz is real, but so is Doug Peterson's ineptitude. And I think that's the problem is with, you know, see, this is the thing that we all get caught up in fantasy. We see the talent, or you watch them play in college and you see and you go, oh, my God, great. I'm so excited. And oh, good. Positive news at a camp. But then you got to go back and say, OK, what's the offense he's playing in? What's their MO? What are they going to do with the football? Now, granted, this is another one of those scenarios where kind of like the Gase thing, Peterson hasn't had, I don't think, a talent so far as good as Miles Sanders. But there are still questions. How's that timeshare going to work out and in what capacity? Miles Sanders might be one of the perfect guys to let somebody else draft or overdraft and then trade for him in a couple weeks. Because I think that's what's going to happen. I think a lot of people will get very frustrated with the usage. I think he's a better long-term than the 2019 guy.
Yeah.
And for me, I like him as a discount. And for most of the drafts I've been in so far with some really smart people, he has not been aggressively taken. So if he's being aggressively taken on ESPN or Yahoo or other formats, that's fine. I would let other people aggressively take him. But if he falls, I think it's all about what ADP you get him at. And if you get him as your third running back as a flex guy, yeah, I'm intrigued there, but I'm not intrigued as my RB2. I am nowhere near ready to put him in that conversation.
Now that Duke Johnson is on the Texans, I got asked this by the Welsh the other day, Duke Johnson or Jordan Howard?
PPR, I think Duke Johnson's going to do very well in that. I think he fits very well into what they've been lacking in that offense, which is a guy who can catch the ball in the backfield, because that's not really Lamar Miller's MO. So I think that's going to be fascinating to watch for Watson. And I think that could be that last piece of that Texans offense. Now, granted, the defense, you know, it's really good on paper, but the injuries the last couple of years have been a little wacky. But I don't know, man. I think that could be it's a fascinating addition. And I would I'd rather take my chance with him, because I also don't think you know what his role is, kind of like James White or Tariq Cohen. You know, they're going to eat, you know, their role is going to probably be. And I think he's going to pick up that offense pretty well.
I said it's a broke ass version of Gordon and Eckler.
Probably Miller and Duke. Yeah, so. Yeah, that's probably a good way of putting it.
Moving on to the Redskins here. When I was writing this question, I was like, what do I even ask? You know, but I think the most important one for this team is how are the carries going to be split up between Geis and Peterson? I think that is the most important question you can ask yourself when looking at this Redskins team. So what is Joe Pizzapia's opinion on that?
I think it's a 60-40 split for Peterson for the first month of the season. And then for the rest of the year, it's the inverse.
That's in favor of Geis.
In favor of Geis going forward after that. I think you work the kid in slowly. I think that if you're going to draft Geis, I just drafted him in one of the Black Book listener leagues. He's like my fourth running back or something. I took it. That's fine. You know, I think you have to have patience. It's not going to be an immediate gratification kind of situation. So if you have the patience to wait, I think it will pay off eventually, because they have to start turning the page in that organization for the fan base, for the salary cap, for everything. It just makes sense to start turning the page. But at the same time, I think it would be foolish to kind of throw him to a huge workload right out of the gate in week one. Coming off the injury, coming off a little slow in the camp, I think it'll just be kind of silly.
But here's my one question with that is, if you think he's good enough to go 60-40 on the back end, wouldn't he have looked healthy enough and then after that, way more talented than Peterson to be able to go ahead of Peterson? Obviously, this is, you know, somebody's going to get hurt at some point, you know, and maybe not injured, maybe banged up. But somebody's going to get hurt at some point. So maybe Geis is performing because of that or something. But I think if he's good enough to take carries away from Peterson, I think it would probably look more like a 75-25 on the back end. Don't you?
That's the best case scenario. Yeah, that's what you'd like to have happen. But I don't think that's what you want to bid on, if that makes sense. Yeah. I think you bid on the 60-40 and then you hope that the upside is 75-25 by the time you get into like November. You know, when you're making that big playoff push, that he's taking over as the guy. That's what you're hoping for.
Flex running back is best, right? You don't want Geis as your RB2.
No. He has RB2 upside for sure. Yes, I still think that. I love him as a talent, but he's a rookie again. You know, I mean, people, just because he's been in the league doesn't mean he's been in the league. You know, he hasn't stepped foot on the field.
Well, I like that. The NBA does that. The NBA, you have to play a certain amount of leagues, and Major League Baseball, you have to play a certain amount of at bats or innings pitched to be qualified as a rookie. And he can't get rookie of the year because he wiped out his knee year one.
You know, Mahomes was quote unquote a second year player last year, but it's really the first time he really played.
Right.
And my God, it should not be that easy. It just shouldn't, man.
Let's go on to the AFC North here and Baltimore starting there. Is it all going to fall apart with Lamar at the helm? Because I don't know that we've honed in on the Ravens that much on the Black Book, Joe, but it seems to me like you're kind of not buying in on anything here in Baltimore.
I'm not buying into the fact that the problem is, for me, they lost a ton on the defense, and that was the identity of this team.
Yes.
And that, to me, is the problem. The problem is, you've got an offense in Pittsburgh, an offense in Cleveland, and you know what? When A.J. Green, if he gets back healthy, a decent offense in Cincinnati. This division has a lot of really good offensive players. And the problem is, Baltimore's strength used to be physical football, do enough on the offensive side, but the defense is what's winning this game. Now it's the offense that's going to win this game, and I think that's putting a lot on Lamar Jackson. I think Mark Ingram's going to be much better than people realize, and I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. He's going to be a terrific draft value. But I think what's going to fail Baltimore ultimately is not really Lamar Jackson. It's not going to be his fault. I think it's going to be the defense.
Yeah, I think that I'm kind of on the inverse of Mark Ingram than you, Joe, because I think that Justice Hill fits better because he ran so much RPO at Oklahoma State. And that's kind of, they're going to have to bring that in for Lamar. So I think that
Hill. But you think they're going to bring that in so quickly? Like, do you think that's something that they experiment with?
I don't think they're going to just specifically run RPO, but I think it's going to eat into Ingram enough to where he sits the series and, oh, here's Justice Hill. Here's, you know, someone else that they're playing. You know, it's Gus Edwards, because they're used to that stuff because they've been in college more recently than Mark Ingram. So not that Mark Ingram can't run that stuff, and I still think he's going to lead the team.
Well,
in
carries. Here's the thing. Everyone forgets that Mark Ingram can catch the football.
Yeah,
because he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody. But
I just don't know that Lamar can throw it to running backs. I know he can throw the ball downfield. I've seen him do it. You know,
I know, but like you hope that you could get him to like just learn a little bit. Like, it's like, hey, look, just ease back.
A little
okay?
touch.
Like,
little
explain
touch.
To him like a Madden thing. But like, you know, but also just from the sense of protecting him, not just like actually protecting him physically, which I think is also a big part of Ingram's presence on the field, but also protecting him with the knowledge that he has as a veteran back there with him, I think is very important for his development and growth. And I think what you saw sometimes last year too, is that carousel of running backs does not help a young quarterback. But when you have a guy like Ingram, who's been around Drew Brees and been around all that stuff, I mean, I think that helps enormously. And I agree with you, Hill, talent-wise, you're 100% right. But I think that when we go back to what's best for the organization and then winning football games, I think it's a lot more of Ingram's presence on the field.
Right.
And then Hill coming in there, making some spectacular, you know, moments, and I think he's very game for that.
I still think Ingram leads in carries, and I think he gets the goal line work. So, Lamar should also get some goal line work as well. And I'm a little fearful because they're going to run Taysom Hill stuff with Trace McSorley, the kid they drafted out of Penn State. So he's going to be all over the field. So they might run some goal line packages with him as well. So I'm just not too into Mark Ingram this year, but we'll see how it works. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch Lamar Jackson. I know that. Cincy, where do we take AJ Green now, if at all, Joe? He had the surgery. They say he's going to miss. What did they say, Joe? The first half of the first half?
Yeah, first half. The party of the first half. Should be
it's a dream inside a dream. So.
It's very Inception. This injury is very Inception. At the end, you end up just, it's you and Zach Taylor and Tom Hardy at a whiskey bar at a speakeasy in New York City when all said and done. That's, I don't know why, but that's where you end up.
I'm looking at the rankings here. They got AJ Green just ahead of Jarvis Landry. You want AJ Green or Jarvis Landry?
It's hard because I like Jarvis Landry, you know, yeah. But I think I want Jarvis Landry. I do.
Me too.
It's I'm very, very frustrated by the verbiage. And, you know, it would not surprise me if all of a sudden week two, there he is, boom, and he's healthy and he's ready to go. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was week nine and we're looking at each other going, oh, my God, why did they lie to us? It just it feels very weird. And I think, you know, there's enough injuries, enough issues that go on there where I think that, you know, you got to put yourself in the best situation. But I would not like laugh or think it's a real decision to make right there. But I think that's about where you want to take him. You want to take him where, like, do you want to have him as your wide receiver 2.5? Like, is that kind of right? Like,
he that's has kind to of, be a wide receiver 3 for me. I think that's
but it comes down to roster
line.
Construction, too.
Right.
Like, if you're number 1 and 2, you know, it's like if you took Michael Thomas and Juju to start your draft. And then all of a sudden
you
later
take
on,
the risk, right?
You take the risk with AJ Green. That's fine. But if like your first two guys are like, maybe it's Woods and then, you know, you like
DJ Moore, right?
Yeah. Then it's like, I don't know if that's the route you want to go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but you can make the argument. Maybe I want the upside in the back half of the season. And he has that. I think after last year and after a couple years of, you know, a couple years, I've been playing fantasy football since 1996. But, you know, after a long time, I think I'm just less and less inclined to draft a player that is walking into the season injured. So I think that I'm not leaving him completely off my list, but he has to come at a deal. So and it has to be pretty below Jarvis Landry. I think Jarvis Landry, I'm easily taking over him. Last one in the North before we hit the break, Joe. Cleveland, how afraid of Kareem Hunt do we need to be if we are drafting Nick Chubb?
Not afraid at all.
At all.
No, don't be afraid. Stop being afraid. Stop being a scaredy cat. Don't be afraid. Week 10 is a long way away. Okay. It's a
they
huge
just traded
long,
Duke,
long
though.
Way away. They did just trade Duke, and Kareem Hunt will probably be in that kind of a role when he comes back. Look, are we crazy? Like, do we not watch the New Orleans Saints have a high powered offense where two guys finish as RB1s? Like, do we not think that it's possible that you could run an offense that has a high powered passing attack, but also has two running backs in it that could also still be fantasy worthy? It doesn't mean that Chubb just stops being useful. drives me crazy, man. It drives me absolutely crazy. The Kareem Hunt thing, like people are like, oh, it's going to kill Chubb's value. Good. Let me have Nick Chubb. You go do what you're doing, and I'll be happy with Nick Chubb at the discount. It's fine.
It's funny because we talked to Emery, and he's, you know, he said Kareem Hunt is way, way better than Nick Chubb. And I don't know if I agree with that.
He might be.
Yeah.
Look, he might be. But at the same time, I don't know if that matters.
Right.
Because what matters is where's Cleveland at in week 10? What's going on? What's Chubb's health? What's Kareem Hunt's health? What's, who knows? Did Kareem Hunt get into something else stupid in the 10 weeks? There's so many variables by the time we get to week 10 in the freaking season that is only a couple of weeks where he can influence in a positive way or in a negative way Nick Chubb's value. And I just don't think that it's a scenario where you have that Chubb is the guy that loses out for it. I just don't get it. I don't see it.
Yeah, me neither. But we're going to stop right there. We're going to hit a break and we will come back and we'll get as many more teams as we possibly can with my buddy Joe Pizzapia at Joe Pizzapia 17 on the Twitter. So we will be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire. In this league is cooking.
Welcome back. It's the final segment with my buddy Joe Pizzapia. And please, if you have not, go buy a black book. And you know what? Tweet Joe and tell him that you bought it because of me. Make me look good. Please.
Yes. Somebody. Yeah. Somebody, please make him look good for the love of God.
I think I've had one person on Twitter like, I love this section from Bogman. Everybody else says, I love Nate. Meanie's the best. I love Sealy. And I'm over here with one guy. So tell him that you love it because of me. So that way Joe will invite me back but next
year. The question
year.
Is, if a compliment drops on Twitter, does Bogman make a sound?
Because you're not whatever. On there ever.
You, do you see that?
You in the Welsh.
You're the one who always tells, you're the one who says, I'm never on there, I'm never on there.
Well,
but you are. You're there.
I'm on there, but the Welsh likes to say, oh, you never answer questions. Well, look, here's the thing.
Maybe Joe, they're stupid questions.
Joe answers questions so fast. And what am I like? Is it even worth it for me to come in and say, yeah, I agree.
I'm like a 14-year-old girl on Twitter.
That's right.
I'm all day. I'm just
right.
Just
exactly.
Social media. I'm posting pictures of me, you know, at all kinds of places, eating
it's
lunch.
Joe and every freshman high school girl. They spend the same amount
OMG.
On social media.
So many things going on. Feel cute tonight. Might do a draft.
That is exactly right. That's exactly what happens every day with Joe. So he's on.
You know what happens? Though? Honestly, on the weekends, I go dark on the weekends on Twitter. I do. Because all people ask me stuff all day. There's all stuff. There's stuff to promote. And then I go dark. Like right. Weekends come. It's like, nope, I'm out. I'm done. Watching football. Leave me alone.
Yeah. And look, if you want to contact me directly, you got to get on the Patreon. Get on patreon.com/ITL Army. Get in the group me rooms. Then you can DM with me all day. That's fine. I answer those first, of course. So, but Twitter, when I see it, I answer the question if no one's answered it. But if Joe has answered it and the Welsh has answered it, why do I need to go in here and be like, yeah, I agree with those guys. Sometimes I'll like it. And I think the like kind of means, I mean, I'm not Sealy, so I will like something. So,
oh, yeah. I wanted him to like one tweet before he dies.
Yeah,
I wonder
well,
what that
we'll
tweet's
see.
Going to be. I'm going to hack into his Twitter. I'm going to find a way to do this. Because I'm out with him in places and things like that. I'm going to take his phone, hack into his Twitter, and like one of my tweets.
Oh.
Just so I can, and then I can take a screenshot. And then even if he unliked it, I can be like, nope, it happened.
Didn't he accidentally like something one time and everybody lost their mind?
He might have. But I'm gonna make it, and I'm going to screenshot it, and it's going to live forever.
All right, let's move on with the questions here. And we're at the AFC North. Last team here is my Pittsburgh Steelers. And I know you haven't been the biggest James Conner fan in the world. You do like him, and I think he kind of proved himself last year to you. But there has been kind of some Jalen Samuels chatter, right? A lot of people are in on the Jalen Samuels hype train, and they think that he's going to start to steal carries away from James Conner. And I feel like this is one of those things, Joe, that we see on social media, we see on a news blurb or whatever, and everybody just panics. They pick this up and run with it. But I'm not buying into this James Samuels as a role. Are you at all?
No, I'm not. And looking at this question, I'm thinking to myself, I don't have an answer for this question. Like, and any jerk off analyst, I don't know if I could say that, but I did, who thinks that they do have an answer for this question, you don't. You don't. I think the best answer to this question is Jalen Samuels has a huge role if James Conner gets hurt.
Right.
And I think that's the thing. And that's a conversation to have, because there's been some questions about the durability. They've been there. We all know that the running back situation in Pittsburgh has yielded very good fantasy returns almost no matter who is running the football. So to me, as long as Roethlisberger is upright, whoever is in that position is going to be fantasy worthy. So until that changeover happens, I can't get excited about drafting Jalen Samuels. I think that's one of those draft picks, unless you're in a deeper league, where I look at it and I go, really? Like, that's what you're going to do when there's all these other guys out there that could really help your team potentially on bye weeks or other stuff? Like, that's the guy you just gonna sit there and rot on a weekly basis? I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, look, he could have a bigger role in the offense, but is it going to affect Conner? I don't think it is. You know, he's a guy that came out of NC State as an H-back, so he can catch the ball, and he can line up tight with the line on some formations as well. I don't know that they're necessarily going to do that a bunch. I've heard they practice a lot with him in the backfield, too. So, you know, what we're going to see in the preseason here, what they're going to end up doing with him. But they also drafted Benny Snell. So I think this is just adding depth to the roster more than, you know, oh, we have to have X, Y, or Z behind Conner, and this guy has to get this many touches. I think it's because in the past, when Bell got hurt, when whoever got hurt, they were going to, such deep lengths to find someone. It was kind of embarrassing. So I think it's just we have good guys on the roster now. People think they're going to make a push. I don't necessarily think they are. Moving to the NFC North, Joe, Chicago. How fast can David Montgomery become the lead back, and how much is he going to push Tariq Cohen from his role, if at all?
I think he's the lead back right now. I mean, I just do. I think this is what Nagy's been waiting for. And it's funny because everybody wants to, you know, diss Jordan Howard, and that's fine. There's shortcomings with Jordan Howard. But last year, Jordan Howard had 250 rushes for 935 yards and 9 touchdowns. If I told you David Montgomery, the ADP you're going to get him, is going to get 950 yards and 10 touchdowns, would you be like, yeah, sign me up. That's fantastic. I'm all about that.
If he had 250 touches and didn't have more than 900 yards, I'd be very surprised.
Okay, well, but I think he can do that with 225, 235 touches. I think he can still get into that range and do that, because I think he's a tough runner, and I think he fits exactly what they want to do. And I think that's, you know, somewhere around between 9 and 1,000 and somewhere between 8 and 10 touchdowns, I think, is what you're looking for out of him. And at the current ADP, I think that's a great value. Fresh legs. I don't think he's going to change Tariq Cohen's role. I think what makes the Bears so special potentially is Tariq Cohen's presence on the field. You want him touching the football. It makes Trubisky better. It makes Montgomery better. It makes everything better. So for me, Tariq Cohen is very safe. I don't see Montgomery's presence there being a problem for Tariq Cohen, because, again, Tariq Cohen was pretty darn good last year. He finished pretty high in terms of PPR running backs, and Jordan Howard still carried the ball 250 damn times. So it's just so funny to me, the things that people worry about, and they do. It's a great question, because people are literally sitting there twiddling their thumbs and worrying about this.
This offense is ready to explode. I don't know if they're going to turn into the Rams.
Well, Matt Nagy might have to be the quarterback.
but people forget this. Trubisky didn't have much starting experience, even in college. He had, like, I think it was 13 games or 14 games that he actually started in college. So he is kind of learning on the job in the NFL here. So just getting him more experience is absolutely fantastic, and they have just surrounded him with so many weapons. Montgomery, Cohen, Allen Robinson, you know, they got Taylor Gabriel, they went and drafted Anthony Miller, they got Trey Burton, they got so much to put around Mitch Trubisky. It's kind of, you know, if you fail with all these weapons, that's on you, even if you're not that experienced. Moving on to Detroit here, Joe. TJ Hockenson is getting rave reviews, and I know you've been a fan of kind of waiting to draft tight ends and taking a Hockenson or a Fant. Are you buying into the tight end one type of a hype train that we're getting from Hockenson?
I am. I'm buying lock, stock, and barrel, and sometimes I take both of them just to see.
just to see which one works, right?
One thing, maybe I get one of them right. It's funny what people will do at the end of drafts, and I look and I'm like, really? Like, where's the upside there? What are you doing there? Why not take a guy like Hockenson? What if he becomes the next really, you know, solid tight end? What if he's a guy that finishes tight end six?
Right.
What kind of amazing value is that to take towards the end of a draft? I'm not saying he's going to finish tight end one. That's ridiculous. I'm not even going to say he's going to finish top five. But what if he finishes six? That's not an impossibility. And not in this crop of tight ends. And I think that's the thing. It's about the relative value of the other tight ends on the board when you look at Hockenson. And Fant's another one of those guys. You can talk to him later on. But Hockenson, to me, I think he's going to have a role right away. The signing of Jesse James to me was nothing more than like, this is a blocking tight end. This is a guy that's going to help Hockenson kind of understand things about the NFL. But Hockenson is a matchup nightmare.
I can tell you right now, Hockenson is already a better blocker than stupid Jesse.
Well, James. I agree. But you know what I mean? Like, if they go to those two tight end sets or whatever right. they do, you know, I could see him kind of being in there. But it's more just like bringing a veteran who's been in the league who can teach the kid about the position and at that level. And I think that's fine. Like, that's smart. But to
Hockenson
me,
I think or Fant. If you have to pick one.
You know, it's funny because I feel like quarterback wise, it makes sense to go with Fant because you think, OK, well, you know, that's probably more likely his wheelhouse. But I don't know, man, there's just something about Hockenson. And I'll tell you what, that's why I say both sometimes, because you could probably have both of them at your disposal at any time. But I think it's Hockenson slightly higher for me right now, but it's really a one in one A, whereas most people, I'm sure, will put Fant ahead. But I just think I look at the rest of this team and I don't see where all, like, everybody loves Kerryon Johnson and that's great. I love him too, but I'm still concerned. I think Hockenson's role in the offense is going to be defined and I think it's going to be a thing. And people will say, well, Stafford was never good with Ebron. Yeah, well, Ebron ain't Hockenson. you know what I mean? He's not, right? I mean, right. You would agree with that, I think, right?
Yes, Hockenson. Okay. Hockenson's really, really good. He's just such a good tight end. Like there are many, many tight ends, but I mean, I think specifically coming out of the draft, I think Hunter Henry, OJ Howard, and Hockenson and Fant, both coming off of Iowa too, are the ones that I'm super excited for their career. So
what do you think, Hockenson over Fant? What do you think about those two?
I think Fant is just going to be better fantasy wise, but I think it's harder for Fant to get on the field immediately because they have some depth at tight end in Denver.
We also have a lot of good wide receivers too.
Right. You have
and
good
the Marvin
wide receivers.
Jones injury is something I don't know if how long is that going to linger.
Right.
And they don't seem to like him either. It wouldn't shock me if they kind of dealt him this season too. It seems like they're kind of over and done with him. Whereas you look, you got Sutton, you got Hamilton, you got Emmanuel Sanders if he's healthy. There's a lot of other options there in Denver.
But also, Matt Stafford is never thrown to the tight end, right? He just never has. And it could be because Eric Ebron dropped so many balls, he just got tired of looking for that route and quit looking at it. But he just never has. So I'm a little concerned there as far as Hockenson goes, too. But I think Hockenson is going to be on the field more than Fant. But I think Fant is just... Fant is just a better fantasy asset, I think. So I would go with Fant. But it's razor thin. Speaking of razor thin, let's go to Green Bay. And this is, I think that we need to answer this question, Joe, because I think it kind of has been, well, just take one of them. Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Geronimo Allison. Because I think it's time to pick a side, right? These guys are Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. You have to pick one. Because one of them is going to be Shawn Michaels. And one of them is going to be Marty Jannetty.
Boy, oh boy. So. That Marty Jannetty rabbit hole lately. Woo, man. Talk about dark, dark times. You read some of that stuff on social media. Wow.
I mean, maybe they'll be more like the Hardy Boys and they'll both suck, but MVS or Geronimo.
They'll have their moments. Look, you and I were the Packers whisperers last year because you and I were both team Aaron Jones.
Yes.
And Welsh was with Williams. And we said, no, it's definitely Jones. It's going to be Jones. And it was Jones. We were right eventually on this one. You and I see eye to eye on this one, too. You say MVS. I say MVS. I think that everyone's giving the love to Allison because of the role he's in. But I think this is one of those spots where I think the talent of MVS is going to win out. And you do have a quarterback that's good enough to find the open man. And he's so good at getting open. And if you try to double up, you know, Adams, I think you're just in, you're just asking for trouble. So for me, I think it's going to be MVS. Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. You're right. You got to pick a side because they're both so close to each other in ADP. Right. What side are you on? You're still MVS, right?
I'm still MVS.
What's your reasoning? Why are you on MVS?
Because everything from the preseason that we've heard, and I know news isn't always the best, but I think that everything that I've heard is clear cut number two, MVS. Geronimo Allison's going to work from the slot. Yes, Randall Cobb had great years from the slot in Green Bay. I understand that. But everything that I've heard is the number two receiving option on this team is MVS. He's over Jimmy Graham. You know, he's just behind Devontae Adams. And Devontae's going to get a lot of double coverage. And he can beat it. He did last year. So, and to be honest, I think that Equanimee St. Brown is the second best talent at wide receiver. But work ethic and getting out there and all that stuff, I don't know how much he loves football. That was always the question with him.
Well, but
and
that's why let's think MVS about it too.
And Allison have passed him.
When you know, Aaron Rodgers at his best, you know, you had big seasons from Jordy Nelson on one side and from Adams on the other. I mean, it's not like only the slot guy was the other guy in that offense.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing that doesn't make sense to me. It was like, oh, it's got to be the slot guy. Like, really? It does? Have we not watched Aaron Rodgers before? Because I'm pretty sure there's been some other guys in there.
He can throw every route. So what difference does it make, right?
Yeah.
So I'm MVS all the way on that one. The last one, I feel like this is the most interesting question that I put on this sheet. So maybe you disagree with me. But with the Vikings, I'm going to ask you, are the two tight end sets that Zimmer wants to run and the addition of Alexander Mattison, who carried the ball over 300 times at Boise State last year, and they have Dalvin Cook, are those switches and additions the death of one of the wide receivers in Minnesota? And if so, which one?
I don't think so. I think that their problem was just balance last year. And they just became way too predictable. And they tried to just force the football. And everybody knew exactly what we were going to do. The first eight games of the year, Adam Thielen was we were talking about, is he the number one wide receiver in football? And it feels like nobody remembers that conversation.
That's because they remember the second half where he got over 50 yards, right. I think, once. So
yeah, well, the problem was because they became so predictable. So the key for them is Dalvin Cook. And I think the Mattson draft is because you have a real concern there, because it's been a couple of years now where Dalvin Cook has not been the guy. And he has not been able to stay on the field. And that is a huge issue. So you need to be able to make sure now you have the insurance policy to not become a predictable team if and when he falls off the map or falls out of his chair or tears an ACL or whatever. So that's the situation where I think Mattson. Now, in terms of the two tight end set thing, I don't know, man. I am not buying this. I'm just not. You know,
well, they gave Rudolph the extension and they just drafted Irv Smith. So
they drafted Irv Smith.
They're doing it.
But I think this was a horrendous decision that they made, because to me, the right thing, they have so many other things they could have taken in the draft. And if you were, and everyone said, well, they did it for, you know, because they could just move on from Rudolph. And then they signed Rudolph to an extension. Yeah. That's what we all thought. I was like, well, okay. And, you know, I don't know. I think there'll be specific spots where they'll do that, but I don't think it's going to be the death of either one of these wide receivers. And I don't think it's going to happen as much this year as people might think. And who's to say that, you know, you're not in a situation where maybe Irv Smith really does come along and maybe they decided to move on from Rudolph because he signed the contract and he's controllable. And there's a lot of teams that could use a tight end that can catch the football.
I love Dalvin Cook. That's what I'll say about the Vikings.
I do too.
Offense.
So, I do too.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch, but he is Joe Pizzapia. You can find him on the Twitter at Joe Pizzapia 17. Joe, thanks so much for joining me for this hour. A lot of questions in, and we are going to be back after the break with your boy, Nate Hamilton. So it's going to be interesting with me and Nate, because we're going to have to talk Devin Funchess at some point, right, Joe?
I'm hoping so, but always good to talk to my good friend Bogman. And you and Nate play nice, because I know sometimes things get contentious there, but in a good way, in the best way possible.
That's right. We're going to have a lot of fun. That's what I'll say. And maybe it'll get contentious, but it's always fun with Nate. And we will be right back for the third and final hour of ITL and FNTSY right after this break. Stay tuned, everybody.